of the June 2007 7-day retreat in Springwater. Of the June 2007 7-day retreat in Springwater. Several words to describe what? This moment of breathing. Heart beating. Feel of the hands touching or touching the legs. Feel of the feet on the floor, on the mat. Gentle breeze, cool air. People all around sitting quietly. Swaying, fluttering of the leaves on the trees. Is it all happening in stillness? Stillness that doesn't divide. I like this, but I don't want that. Stillness that has lots of space. It's not separate from what's here this moment. Is it effortless to be here? Listening openly to what's here? Or is there a wanting something or fearing something? And does that churn the energies of efforting? like to share a little story. There are two birds' nests that over a number of years have appeared up in the eaves of the little roof that covers the entrance to cabin number two, cabin where I live part of the time. And a couple of weeks ago, as I would walk up to the cabin, getting closer, I'd notice a bird fly very quickly out of one of the nests, the one closest to the cabin wall itself, out to the bank of trees. Give some chirping to, I don't know to what. Maybe something about territory. So this had gone on for several weeks. And just a few days before the retreat began, in walking up to the door of the cabin, I looked up, and there were these little furry grayish heads, or at least three, maybe more, maybe four, little tiny black dots for eyes. Little pointed beaks. And what was also amazing was how utterly still they were. Actually wondered if they were alive. Too high up to see or notice the chests moving for breathing, so there were just these little heads. And it was nice entering a retreat because it helped to be a reminder to be as quiet as possible. Going into the cabin, closing the door, not wanting to disturb them. And yet they seemed undisturbable. And sometimes walking up to the cabin and looking up, they were the backs of their heads. Whatever position they were in, they were all together in that, whichever way they were facing. This went on for several days. And a couple of days into the retreat, walking up to the cabin, taking a step onto the cement floor, part of that entryway with Eve over it. There was this tremendous flurry with, again, wasn't even able to count, 3 or 4 birds flurrying out of that nest. To where, I don't know. I think a couple landed on the trees nearby. The heart was pounding. It was such a surprise and a delight. It's amazing to be there. At that moment, and then noticing some kind of thinking that this, that I had something, some connection with this. Being in the eaves there of the cabin. Kind of almost wanting urge to create some kind of story with me there. This idea of an owner or participant. But what struck at the time was, it was the sense that, I don't know that the birds even knew they could fly. Not in the sense or the way that we think about what we can and can't do, what is or isn't possible. Or I should say that wondered that if they knew they could fly, could or can, it wouldn't be seem to be relevant. There was just the moment, maybe the startling of the noise of my walking to the cabin, that was enough, that it was time. And leaving the nest, did they know exactly what branch and what tree they would land on? Where exactly the next meal would come from? How their lives would unfold? Or is it all taking place in this vast space of not knowing? We talked about it yesterday, I think it was yesterday, the limitless possibilities. What we plan for, remember, think about. I was going to say has a certain limited quality. But not that all thought I have to look at that. I was going to say all thought does it need to be limited. What's meant by that is if it's coming out of the immediacy of meeting the moment. Well, let's say it has more limitless possibilities than the confinement when there isn't presence, some awareness. Somebody sent an email the other day and asked about the future of the center. Somebody who's never been here before, never corresponded with before. And there was some question like, what's the future of the center? Doesn't seem appropriate, does it, at a moment like that to say, well, there's really no future. It's all just here, now. So I wrote back mentioning some things, or schedules of retreats with different people doing retreats, and Tony's still participating in retreats. And then said something like, we tend here to meet things as they come up. And I kind of left it something like that and didn't wonder too much, but there was a little bit of wondering how that might be taken, because there have been people who have liked to have a, what they call a master plan for things. Whether it's structures or a look to what will be, a planning, a master plan for that. So said this thing about meeting things as they come up. And the email I received back said, ain't it the truth? Some resonance there. this moment. That's a dualistic way of putting it. Isn't that the essential thing? Meeting it, already knowing. About it. About the outcome. With our insistences of having things a certain way. Can there be some touching of this not knowing? The openness of that. So that we can look and listen together. Hear each other out, so to speak. I remember years ago where in staff meetings we would, it seemed, go over the same issue or topic again and again, and it was very much a reflection of Tony's way to look at it again. Not that it would be again, might have felt that way, but so even a number of us might think, well, we've already talked about, we've agreed about that or whatever, but that possibility becoming a living thing. And people have mentioned that coming here, and it's almost, I think, been taken a little bit for granted that that occurs. Maybe not 100% of the time, but it's very much the spirit of getting together and looking together. And people have mentioned to me how not so much even just the outcome, but the very energy of listening. How moved they were by that, when that is alive in the moment. Feeling really listened to. Which takes a certain energy, because we also know that energy of, oh, don't bother me with that again. Or is it effortless as well? Because the resistance is let up. resistance let up, efforting let up. Barely resembles at all the real thing. And isn't it out of space of no resistance and a quality of being here that makes possible for what we call love, compassion, to unfold? Not as concepts, but as living, breathing, being with each other and everything as it is. Felt we couldn't leave without reading a little bit of poetry, being the last day of retreat. Poetry by Mary Oliver. A couple of us had the good fortune to attend a poetry reading that she gave in Rochester some weeks ago. I don't think she does a lot of traveling, but if you do have the opportunity to hear her, it's like a meditation to sit and listen in that stillness. It was interesting because I've seen her photograph on her books, and a couple of us from the center here who went, we were in the front row to the left facing the stage, and this slight gray-haired elderly lady came and sat down almost right next to Kieran, wearing like one of these watch caps kind of hats, and just sitting there going through some notes. And then Kieran turned to me and he said, "That's Mary Oliver." So having pictures and images based on photos didn't help. Didn't help to recognize her. I think Joan touched upon that the first day. World of change. This is a poem that she was asked to read that night. It's called Percy Too. I have a little dog who likes to nap with me. He climbs on my body and puts his face in my neck. He is sweeter than soap. He is more wonderful than a diamond necklace, which can't even bark. I would like to take him to Kashmir and the Ukraine and Jerusalem and Palestine and Iraq and Darfur, that the sorrowing thousands might see his laughing mouth. I would like to take him to Washington, right into the Oval Office, where Donald Rumsfeld would crawl out of the president's armpit and kneel down on the carpet and romp like a boy. For once, for a moment, a rational man. This one is called Little Dog's Rhapsody in the Night, Percy 3. He puts his cheek against mine and makes small, expressive sounds. And when I'm awake, or awake enough, he turns upside down, his four paws in the air, and his eyes dark and fervent. Tell me you love me, he says. Tell me again. Could there be a sweeter arrangement? Over and over he gets to ask it. I get to tell. One of our staff people left early on in the retreat, who had been on staff for, I think, about half a year, Marianne. And she was such an affinity and in touchness with nature. And part of what she needed to attend to here was catching mice in the building. And we have these have a heart traps, which usually we put some peanut butter and cracker in there, and that works pretty well. But when she was doing it, we'd see little pieces of apple in there. And when we asked her what the apple was for, she said, well, she didn't want the mice to dehydrate sitting in the trap. This poem is called In Praise of Craziness of a Certain Kind. On cold evenings, my grandmother, with ownership of half her mind, the other half having flown back to Bohemia, spread newspapers over the porch floor so, she said, the garden ants could crawl beneath, as under a blanket, and keep warm. And what shall I wish for myself, but being so struck by the lightning of years, to be like her with what is left, that loving. We will end there.